This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
And welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour and the big picture for this particular week. You know, the U.S. economy is made up of 70% consumption. That means you and I, as consumers, buying things. And one reason we talk about the Federal Reserve so much in its policies is because the Fed, as I'm sure you know, adjusts the price of credit. If they lower interest rates, then credit is easier to get, easier to borrow, less expensive. If they raise interest rates, it's more expensive to borrow. And so that's why we follow very closely the credit markets here, because they do tell you a lot about the risk of recession and about the probabilities of any kind of a bear market. And one characteristic that we have seen of late, spanning the time since the recession back in 2008, is that credit growth has been anemic.
And John, there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, as we went into the Great Recession, there was a lot of accumulated debt, both at the mortgage level, consumer level, corporate level. There was just a lot of debt that led to the crisis. And of course, when the Fed raised interest rates, as they began doing in 2004, they eventually broke the back of the credit market. So that's why we pay a lot of attention to what the Fed does, but we also monitor the credit markets for signs of the impact of what monetary policy is having on the economy. Now, one reason that we have seen in this economic recovery is banks have been tighter with their credit standards. That was a good thing initially. And secondly, after the Great Recession, remember, banks lost a ton of money in mortgages. And so banks were wanting to repair their balance sheet. And one of the things that the Fed did is they widened the spread for banks. In other words, the banks could borrow money from the Fed, invest it in treasuries, and make a safe rate of return and rebuild their balance sheets. The second thing that happened, though, I think it was in 2010, was the Dodd-Frank regulations that made it overly restrictive on bank lending. And that has, as a result, curbed lending practices, especially at the regional level, with local banks. And that's one of the things that the business community has been complaining to the Trump administration. Yeah, we'd like to see lower taxes because the U.S. has the highest corporate tax rates in the world at 35%. But, you know, you have to do something about regulation. And that includes, and the financial industry is saying the same thing. It's like anything else, John, when you have a problem, the government comes in, they pass legislation, and then they go to extremes on the other side. So there is an effort to repeal some of the more restrictive aspects of Dodd-Frank that make it harder for regional banks to loan to small businesses, which are the job growth engine of the American economy. So there was a number of reasons why you have not seen the credit growth, because without strong credit growth, which is what we saw in the economic recovery in 2002, that began in the summer of that year, all the way leading up to the financial crisis. And previous to that, between 1991 and the year 2000, we saw strong credit growth as debt increased at all levels of society, at the government level, the corporate level, and the individual level. And credit growth really drives economic growth. And it's one of the reasons why, in our own view, you're just not going to see the 3 or 4% economic growth rates that are being promised by the Trump administration or any administration because of the amount of debt that is out there. You need that strong credit growth, and we just don't see that. But there's a number of reasons that that's not going to happen. Number one, there's just too much debt out there. And number two, we now have the Fed raising interest rates, which is going to make it more expensive. And we'll explain to some of the consequences of that. But it's one of the reasons why what we're going to cover here is, are the credit markets signaling trouble ahead? Because there's, as we covered last week on the program, we talked about the chasm between hard and soft economic data. Hard data is actual numbers. You know, what's GDP? What's the unemployment rate? What's industrial production? What's the ISM survey? Those are hard data numbers. The soft data numbers are consumer confidence, small business confidence, and confidence has surged as a result of the election of Donald Trump. But it hasn't translated into stronger economic growth. As we'll see here, it hasn't also translated into strong credit growth. In fact, we've seen just the opposite. So the gist of what we're going to be talking about in this first segment of the big picture, you want to know where the economy is headed, watch the credit markets. They'll tell you all you need. We spend most of our time not only just analyzing economic data, but we follow very closely what's happening at the Fed. And we also, the corollary to that is what's happening in the credit markets, whether it's bond spreads between government bonds and corporate bonds. The wider those spreads widen, as they did in the first part of 2016, which you usually see as the economy weakens, or we're watching the year over year in money supply, the change in money supply, and the change in credit conditions.
Last week, we were talking, if you remember, Jim, the sharp drop in the money supply, and right now it's only growing year to year at about 3.8%. Now, this is not an immediate harbinger of trouble, but you do have to recognize that in a recession, money supply goes to zero or it goes negative. And so what we're seeing right now, it's really a weakening trend. Now, the next question to follow that would be, does it exist in credit as well?
Well, this is one of the things that has been puzzling to economists and analysts, where the stock market has been going, looking at the consumer and business confidence surveys, which just have gone through the roof and are at record levels. Why have we not seen that translated into increased credit demand? And why haven't we seen it into increased lending? And why haven't we seen it into increased investment spending? And that is what is puzzling everybody, because what we have seen develop in the fourth quarter is bank lending is actually slowing down. And I'll give you an example. Total loans and leases, as reported recently in bank surveys, are up only 3.8% in the first quarter of this year versus 6.8% in the first quarter of 2016. In fact, in the third quarter, which was one of the strongest quarters for economic growth in all of 2016. Remember, we started very weak in 2016. It picked up a little bit in the second quarter, but the strongest economic growth rate was in the third quarter of 2016, where credit demand grew by almost 8%. So people are saying if credit was growing, and then all of a sudden now everybody is enthusiastic with consumer optimism, business optimism, why are we not seeing that translated into credit growth, in demand for credit? In fact, what we're seeing is just the reverse. So despite the rise in consumer and business optimism, there has been zero pickup in business investment. And this has been one of the key things that we have seen throughout this economic recovery. Every single year, when you take a look at these economic forecasts for the year ahead, they're always projecting this is the year that we see a takeoff in business investment. John, it has yet to materialize. We just have not seen it. And one of the reasons why economic growth has been this weak is not only credit demand has been weak, but also we've seen rising taxes and rising regulation. Now, when Trump got elected, the stock market took off and is up double digits since November 8th of last year. And the reason is what we call hope, because what the president has promised is he was going to lower corporate taxes, lower individual taxes, and get rid of regulation. The only thing he's been able to do so far is reduce regulation. But right now, all of this is just based on hope, which is reflected in these surveys that they do of consumers and business. And I think what you're seeing right now with the stock market consolidating here over the last couple of weeks is a growing realization is that, number one, the Democrats are going to intend to block everything the president is going to propose. No surprise there. But also, there's a growing view that there is a disparate view within the Republican Party itself. They could not pass the repeal of Obamacare. And there's growing dissension within the Republican ranks in terms of what to do on lowering taxes. Because if you lower taxes, they're trying to keep it revenue neutral. And so what they're not talking about is equalization of tax rates that companies around the globe do. In other words, they put taxes on imports into their country. If a U.S. company sends something over to Europe, they're going to get hit with a value-added tax, likewise in other parts of the country. So what the president is talking about is the border adjustment tax to make it equal to what other countries are doing. And there's a big debate between that within the Republican Party, whether some like it, some don't. So there's a difference in what we're seeing reflected here in the stock market weakness, a difference between hope and actual reality.
Well, since we're on the topic of credit, which, as we point out, has been anemic, the credit growth, we see that loans are starting to decline. The increase in money is slowing down. Now the question is, what is the source of this? Is it a reflection of, let's say, tighter credit standards, regulations that are weighing down the banks, or the realization on the part of the banks that the interest rates are going up and they're just tightening things up?
Well, it's a combination of all those. In fact, if you take a look at, as I mentioned, total loans and leases were actually growing at about an 8% clip in the third quarter, which was the strongest quarter. If we take a look at commercial industrial loans, they're only up 2.8% year over year. And this is what has everybody puzzled, because in the third quarter, when the economy was really the strongest performing quarter out of all of 2016, commercial industrial loans were up almost 9% at an annualized growth rate. Now, what does this mean? Goldman Sachs took a look at this, and this slowdown that we've seen from 9% to less than 3% translates to about $100 billion of less loans being taken out. What happens when there's less credit created or less demand for credit? The economy begins to slow down. What did we see? We saw the economy slow down in the fourth quarter, and we're seeing that slowing trend carrying over into the first quarter. Now, this, by the way, is a trend that we've seen throughout this economic recovery. So the big question is, here we are in Q2. This is the fourth quarter. And as we will get into the weeds here, we are not seeing a pickup in credit into the second quarter, which is going to start to raise questions in terms of economic growth for Q2. It will also start to raise questions in terms of what the Fed is doing about their plans to raise interest rates again, which it's widely expected in June, and also to start shrinking their balance sheet, which further removes credit. But analysts, they're saying that companies, if there's one area that's looking good right now, it's the bond market. And because interest rates are rising, what would you do if you're a business? Rising interest rates, and the Fed is telling you they're going to be raising them now and next year and tightening their balance sheet, corporations are rushing into the bond market and trying to lock in interest rates now, because they know in the next 12 months, in the next couple of years, interest rates are going to be rising, which is going to make it more expensive. In other words, if you have any business plans to expand your business, you're either looking at a merger, you're looking at building a new plant, and you're looking at your finances, you better get those finances in place now, because it's only going to get more expensive going forward. In fact, if you take a look at the bond market, the issuance of debt in the first quarter is at record levels. It's up 18% year over year. And the thing that we're seeing now is everybody is tapping the bond markets. And the reason they're doing that is, it's like anybody else. If you know interest rates are going to be more expensive, you're going to try to lock in whatever rates you can now. Mortgage rates have gone up. Credit card rates have gone up. Home equity loans have gone up. Car loans have gone up. Everything is rising as the Fed raises interest rates.
So if what you're saying here is true, which I assume it is, that the Fed is raising interest rates, then lending has started to slow down. And are we seeing this lending across the board?
Yeah, it's occurring across the board, and we'll get into some of the particulars here shortly. It's occurring probably most noticeably among commercial industrial loans. There's been a big slowdown. It's showing up in mortgage loans. It's showing up in consumer loans, and it's showing up in commercial real estate loans. In the area of commercial real estate, lending by banks, insurance companies, financial institutions, those are the big lenders when it comes to commercial property. You see these big office buildings, big complexes. These are the institutions that supply the credit, because usually a big high-rise office building is going to take a lot of money. You know, some of these high-rise office buildings could be $1 billion. And it is really slowed down. You're seeing it not only in sales activity, and it's also showing up in credit problems at some of the banks. In fact, regulators are voicing concern. For example, if you take a look at all of 2016, lenders lent close to $500 billion in mortgage loans. It was actually $491 billion. That is actually down 3% from 2015. Also, the biggest decline, and this again gets back to this big conundrum that analysts are looking at between all these surveys out there, what we call soft data, with all this optimism about the economy and the stock market, the biggest drop in lending occurred in the fourth quarter of last year, and especially in the residential market, home lending market. And there's two reasons why you're seeing that. Housing prices have been rising for almost 8 years now. So it's getting more expensive to buy a home. So prices have been going up 4 or 5% a year. Secondly, mortgage rates are up a half a point to 0.75 points, depending on what kind of mortgage you're looking at. So that accounts for it, because once again, as interest rates go up, it's more expensive to borrow. But in the housing market, whether you're looking at residential homes, whether you're looking at even commercial properties, prices of real estate have been rising every single year. So whatever you want to buy this year is more expensive than what you wanted to buy last year. So regulators are expressing concern over troubled banking institutions. The number of banks on the Fed's and the FDIC's watch list has increased from 474 banks to 521 banks in 2016. So you've seen a 23% increase in the banks that are under review now by the Federal Reserve. And also, if you take a look at, for example, the latest Fed Senior Loan Officer survey, most domestic banks are reporting tighter either lending standards or terms on commercial industrial loans, especially over the last 3 months and the first quarter. An important reason is a less favorable, uncertain economic outlook. They cited deterioration in the current capital positions, worsening industry-specific problems, risk tolerance or increased risk, decreased liquidity in the secondary market for these loans, deterioration in liquidity positions, and increased concerns about the effects of legislative changes. So a lot of this is being reflected in these surveys. And, you know, if you look at also, we're now starting to see mortgage delinquency rates are now starting to rise for the first time. I mean, things were looking pretty good in the first part of last year. And then in the second quarter of last year, mortgage delinquency rates began to rise across the board. You're also seeing, for example, a change in mortgage applications. And it's no surprising, mortgage application activity is down nearly 32% year over year. What is that reflecting? Once again, in real estate, it's reflecting higher prices, higher mortgage rates, refinancing activity, as you would expect, as interest rates go up, there's less incentive to refinance a mortgage. I mean, if you haven't refinanced your mortgage in the last 3 or 4 years, one of the problems that a lot of homeowners had is as a result of the drop in real estate prices by over 40% during the Great Recession. A lot of homeowners were upside down in their mortgages, so they weren't able to refinance their mortgages because they were basically underwater when it came, in other words, their loans were greater than the value of their property. Well, a lot of that is corrected now with housing prices rising since 2010. But we've seen a sharp drop off in mortgage applications, and they're down 23%, and new purchases are really mainly accounting for a good majority of loan applications right now versus refinancing as rates have risen.
And is something that we were talking about as well that you mentioned is if there's anything that's looking good right now, it's the bond market, because if you assume the rates are going up, companies are wanting to lock in on interest rates, and that's a way to do it.
And I might point out, it's not just that interest rates are rising here, they're rising across the globe. It's hard to believe we hit the bottom in the interest rate market in the summer of last year. So rates have risen in the U.S., they've risen in Europe, they've risen in Japan. And in Europe and Japan, it's one of the reasons we own a bond fund that shorts European debt, is a vast majority of European debt was at negative interest rates. Now we're going from negative interest rates to positive interest rates as rates rise globally. And one thing that we've seen is a weakening in the dollar. So the bond market is setting records in the first quarter of this year in terms of the amount raised. For example, emerging markets, there was $180 billion of bond issuance in emerging markets in the first quarter. It was probably the best quarter on record for emerging markets as the dollar fell. They wanted to take advantage of it. Junk bond issuance has also increased. $80 billion of junk bonds were issued in the first quarter. That's almost double from what we saw last year. Investment grade corporates, this was the big one. $415 billion were issued in investment-grade bonds in the first quarter. That, my friends, is a record. So there's a lot of debt out there. Corporations have borrowed money to implement financial engineering. They've been using borrowed money to buy back stock, increase dividends. And that game is dwindling now as it's getting more expensive to borrow, which is one reason corporations have been tapping the bond market so heavily. And they're taking advantage of this rise. I mean, if you take a look at 10-year treasuries, we're in a narrow trading range. We've been going back from 2.3% to 2.6%. And of course, when rates drop back down to 2.3, where they are now, that affects the corporate bond market because the two are in close tandem. So corporations will rush in with bond offerings, trying to take advantage and lock in as long as possible on low interest rates. But given the fact that interest rates are still rising, we are still operating from a very low interest rate environment. And what is happening, and this is happening at the pension level, the insurance level, and at the institutional level and well-to-do individuals, it is still a hunt for yields in this market. As we talked on the program last week, even though the Fed raised interest rates, you, the consumer, if you have money at a bank and a money market fund, or you have money on deposit as a CD, you're not benefiting from the rise in rates because banks are keeping their rate increases to depositors at a minimum, trying to make money between the difference of what they have to pay depositors and what they are now charging borrowers. The problem is investors are chasing these bonds. And just a word of caution, folks, junk bonds act like stocks. They do well when the market is going up. They do well when the economy is doing well. They do very poorly when the economy is doing poorly, or you're heading into a recession, or the stock market is doing poorly. And the only reason I'm saying that is there's a record level of junk bonds, the first quarter, one of the best on record. And investors who are hungry for yields are just jumping into the corporate bond market. And as we talked about on Lifetime Income a couple of weeks ago, investors are looking at bond funds and they're shopping bond funds based on yield, not realizing the risk that they are taking. And this just goes to show you what's happened. Last year, around this time, we were jumping into the corporate bond market because the spreads between what you could get in a U.S. Treasury and what you could get on corporate debt widened tremendously. In the junk bond market, for example, today, the spread between a junk bond and a quality bond is narrowed to 3.9%. That is less than 50% of where it was a year ago at this time. So a word of caution out there, if you're jumping around chasing yields in bond funds, just trying to get by with the highest yield you can get, a word of caution if you're going into the junk market, given the fact the Fed is going to continue to raise interest rates, credit spreads have narrowed, credit lending is tightening, credit growth is slowing. These are all warning signs. These were the things that, you know, we were following when I wrote my piece, I'm trying to think, I wrote it in 2004 or 2005, called The Day After Tomorrow, when I was talking about what was happening in the mortgage market and the credit markets, forewarning what was coming in 2007 and 2009. And we're following those same things. That's why just a word of caution. I mean, we have switched our strategy from short-term corporate bonds. We are only buying what we call adjustable floating rate bonds because it's, in our mind, the safest place to be when you know that interest rates are going to be rising as a result of Fed rate hikes. I don't want to be locked into a lower interest paying bond.
So right now, what you're doing is you're watching credit spreads, and they did peak last year, and they have now narrowed. And what this all means is that investors are not being compensated for taking an increase in the amount of risk. But once again, I want to reiterate this. One of the reasons that we follow the credit markets is because just like in 2007, when there is trouble coming, it shows up in the credit markets and the bond markets first. It's the first point of impact. So watching that is an indicator of where everything else will go.
Yeah, and there was another key point, and this will lead us into our next segment on the big picture this week. Janet Yellen gave a speech on Monday of this week, and the title of the speech was "The Era of Extremely Stimulative Monetary Policy Has Come to an End." Once again, another warning coming to investors from the Fed. Now, if you read the Fed minutes that came out last week, a couple key takeaways we talked about last week on the program. A warning, the Fed thinks the stock market has gotten crazy, overvalued. And as we have pointed out, it's the second most expensive stock market on record. They also said that they were going to be shrinking their balance sheet in addition to raising interest rates. So here they are, again, a week later, Janet Yellen is saying the era of easy money has come to an end. So once again, the Fed is trying to prep the markets subtly that, hey, the easy money day, we're taking away the punch bowl. And is it a surprise that we have seen the stock market stumble? First, with small cap stocks, mid cap stocks, and even the big major averages like the Dow and the S&P. And as I suspect, as we go forward, you'll begin to see the number of stocks that lead the market begin to narrow. In other words, it'll be the generals, the large caps that lead the markets to their final peak as more and more smaller stock companies start to roll over and form their own bear markets. So the Fed is signaling that, number one, they're taking their foot off the gas pedal. They're going to take away the punch bowl. They're still talking about two more rate hikes this year, three more for next year. So the other thing that they're talking about is another form of tightening, which we talked about last week on the program with Gary Dorsch, is every time the Fed shrinks its balance sheet by $500 billion, that's the equivalent of a 1 percentage point increase in the Fed funds rate. And so they're doing both. They're raising rates. They plan to shrink their balance sheet, and we'll talk about the implications this is going to mean for the budget deficit going forward as we head into the next segment.
Okay, so to put all of this together one more time, see if we can recap this. Credit growth is slowing. The number of troubled banks has increased on the FDIC's watch list. And we're seeing warning signs in the slowdown in the money supply, in the credit markets, and in a narrowing of bond spreads. And one of the things that we're really watching here is the bond markets, because when trouble comes, that's where it will hit first. So given all of this, Jim, what are you doing for your clients anyway?
I'll tell you, right now, given everything that we're seeing, I mean, last year, as I mentioned, in the first quarter, credit spreads just blew out, and we were able to take advantage of that. But now, credit spreads have narrowed considerably. In our opinion, investors aren't being compensated for taking risk. So what we've done is shifted our strategy over to floating rate bonds, where we're able to get 4% and as much as 5%, and those rates will go up as the Fed continues to raise interest rates. And when you're talking about a stock market that may only produce returns of 5 or 6% this year, if I can get 4, 5, or 6% in something that is predictable, I'm going to go for that. So we're increasing our position in bonds, in cash, and floating rate bonds as a result of that, because as the Fed raises interest rates, the rate of return on these bonds increases, which protects your capital.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
You know, Financial Sense News Hour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense News Hour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
We know that Article 50 says that the departing country and the other 27 members have 2 years to negotiate terms of the exit. After that period of time is over, the country that wants to leave will be out of the European Union, regardless of whether there is an agreement. We know for a fact that this has never been done before. The European Union has some regulations about countries leaving the EU. They were introduced almost a decade ago, but they have never been used. So to a large extent, this is unknown, uncharted territory for the Europeans. We know that the British government formally announced its decision to leave on March 29th. And we know that the British government and the European Union have slightly different priorities. The British government wants to negotiate the terms of the divorce and the terms of the future relationship simultaneously. But we know that that's not what the EU wants.
Going back to the beginning of the year, the day of yesterday this year. That doesn't quite sound like the old serial program. Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour on the Big Picture. Going back to the beginning of the year, as part of the first two shows we did, where we do a lot of predicting, Donald Trump, President Trump, is the second president since World War II to enter office with no recession and the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. If we look back at the last two presidents, say, for example, which are Bush Jr., George Bush Jr., and President Barack Obama, they both began with a recession. In the first case, Alan Greenspan, chairman of the Fed at the time, slashing interest rates. President Obama began his first year with the worst recession since the Great Depression, and the Fed slashing interest rates to the lowest level that we have seen in history. So if we look at the reign, shall we say, the presidency of George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush 1, the first president to begin his term of office with rising interest rates and no recession, he didn't get reelected. He had one term in office because by the time he got to the end of his cycle, there was a recession and therefore he was not reelected. No one yet seems to have picked up on the idea that President Trump has stepped into office with an aging business cycle. It's 8 years old already, and the Fed is raising interest rates. As Chair Janet Yellen pointed out this week, the era of loose money is over, but the stock market right now is still running on that optimism. But given the fact it's beginning to look like they're not going to be able to get a lot of these reforms through, or they may not, or it's going to be a bigger battle, and the interest rates are rising, much of that optimism may be totally misplaced.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Wall Street Journal did an article this week called Obama's Debt Interest Bomb. And here's another thing that people aren't really talking about. If you take a look at when George Bush took over the presidency, the national debt was roughly about $5 trillion. By the time Bush left office, the national debt was a little over $10 trillion. So George Bush, George W. Bush, doubled the national debt. So $5 trillion to $10 trillion, but it wasn't as bad when you considered how big the U.S. economy is. Obama comes in, and he inherits $10 trillion of debt, and now that debt is close to $20 trillion. And, John, that is becoming significant. When Obama left office, it wasn't quite, I'm rounding it off to 20. It was actually $19.6 trillion on January 20th. And it is anticipated at the end of this year, where the budget deficit is going to be over half a trillion dollars, that the national debt will be $20.1 trillion at the end of this year. Now, the government's fiscal year ends a little differently. It ends September 30th. And one of the things that Obama has been very fortunate, and we've reported on this, the phenomenon, you know, talk about a guy that has all the luck. He added $9.6 trillion of debt, and the interest cost to the government actually fell throughout his presidency. Because in 2008, the government spent $450 billion in interest expense. When he left office, the figures that we have are for the government's fiscal year, which ended September 30th of 2016. In 2016 fiscal year, the government spent $430 billion. So even though we added $8.6 trillion more debt by September 2016, interest expense for the government fell by $20 billion. Now, let me give you an example of what this means, and it's very important you understand this, because this is all going to change dramatically going forward here over the next 4 or 5 years. The total interest rate paid on all of the government's debt in 2007 was 4.84%. So the government was spending 5% on all of its debt in 2007, which was approaching $10 trillion. 2008, a year later, it dropped to 3.8. 2009, it dropped to 3.3. 2010, it dropped to 2.99. 2011, it dropped to 2.8. 2012, it dropped to 2.5. 2013, 2.4. 2014, 2.36. 2015, 2.33. In 2016, the last fiscal year under Obama, total interest rate on national debt dropped down to 2.23%. Now, as we added more than $1 trillion of debt every single year during Obama's presidency, the interest rate was dropping every single year of his presidency, to the point that last summer, we hit the lowest point where we got 1.36, I think, or 1.32 on 10-year Treasury notes. So every single year, we were fortunate enough, and the president was fortunate enough, he could add trillions of dollars of debt, but the government expense would drop. Now imagine this, think about this from a personal basis. Let's assume that you had $10,000 of credit card debt. And every single year, you added a little over $1,000 of debt to your credit card, so that in 8 years, your credit card balance went from $10,000 to $20,000. But during that entire 8-year period that you were borrowing over $1,000 more a year, the bank charged you less and less interest rates. And it's one of the reasons why the budget deficits came down, because during that whole entire period, we kept adding more debt, but it didn't cost the government money. Well, for the first time in the first quarter of this year, interest payments on the national debt increased for the first time in 8 years, and interest rates on the total amount of debt. Now, when I give you an interest rate, when I said that it dropped down to 2.23 last year, the government has public debt, which you and I can buy publicly. It's the debt that foreigners can buy. And there's also debt that's held in the various trust accounts like Social Security and Medicare. But when you average those two together, it comes up with the total interest rate. It would be no different than if a corporation, or if you had various charge cards, what would be the average balance on all of your credit cards? Well, what is significant and what occurred in the first quarter, for the first time in 8 years, interest rates are rising on total government debt and interest payments are rising. So unlike 2016, where the government ended the year paying $20 billion less in interest expense despite having $8.6 trillion more in debt, it's going in the opposite direction. The reason I'm saying this is last Friday, the Congressional Budget Office published a report, and they said that interest payments in the first half of the government's fiscal year, which began October 1st of last year, rose by $28 billion, up 22.2%, the most of any single spending item within the government's budget. So this is a rather significant trend, and it goes back to, John, something that I talked about, and I just don't see anybody talking about this anywhere. And that is all this optimism that we had coming in to the Trump presidency, then all this stuff is going to get done. You know, when I took a look, I actually went back and did a study at the beginning of the year, and I'm not going to repeat everything we did, but I took a look at every recession since World War II and every presidency since World War II. And that's where I looked at every single president other than George H. Bush and Donald Trump began their presidency, their first year, with a recession and the Fed cutting interest rates. Because, you know, I'm thinking to myself, all this stuff is happening in the middle of, number one, we have $20 trillion in debt. Number two, the Fed is raising interest rates. And number three, this business cycle is already 8 years old. And I began to look at this and I go, there's going to be consequences here. And last Friday, we've seen the first consequences of this. And that is, for the first time in 8 years, interest on the national debt is rising and interest expense is also rising.
So what's happening here is that the CBO would seem to be alerting the president and the Congress that we really have a problem here.
Oh, absolutely. In addition to reporting that the overall interest rate is rising and interest on the debt is rising, the government is also saying that, for example, fiscal 2017 budget deficit will be $63 billion above last year. And a lot of that, half of that, John, is the rise in interest rates alone, which is $28 billion. We're on track this year without any major changes. Right now, the budget deficit could be anywhere from $522 billion to $600 billion. Depending on what happens, because you never know what's going to happen during the year. There's special appropriations. There's things like national emergencies. You have hurricanes that happen where the government has to spend more money. But just to give an example, this rise in interest rates, in the month of March alone, interest expense rose by $7 billion from the previous year, up 30% from a year earlier. And this is the thing that a lot of people have criticized the Fed, is the Fed should have started raising interest rates in 2012 when the economy was doing well, when the stock market was doing well, but it was a presidential election year. And also 2014, it was a congressional election year, and then 2016 was another presidential election year. And so the Fed withheld, and a lot of criticism is, why were you guys holding back? And part of that is the amount of debt that's out there. Part of it is this on and off again economy that we've had with increasing taxes and regulation. We're slowing the rate of growth in the economy. Now, here's a key statistic, and here's something that's very, very important. The CBO said that without any changes to the government's budget, a 1% increase in interest rates on national debt is going to increase the government's interest expense by $160 billion a year. Another way of looking at that, instead of $430 billion, interest expense could go up to $600 billion. And that's just a 1% increase. Now, remember, in 2008, in the middle of a recession, in crisis, the total interest rate on government debt was 3.9%. And it ended in the government's fiscal year last year at 2.23%. So if we go up one full percentage point, which is where we were in 2009 at 3.29%, if we go up one full percentage point, we're talking about $600 billion a year in interest expense. Now, here's something to consider. What's going to raise that? Well, the Fed just raised in December. They raised again in March. They're expected to raise interest rates a quarter point in June, another quarter point in December, and they're talking about three times next year. At the same point, they're also going to be shrinking their balance sheet, and we'll get to the implications of this. There's another budget buster that could be $100 billion to the budget deficit, and I'll explain that in a moment, the implications of a shrinking balance sheet. John, it just floors me that the media, whether it is network television, whether it's the Times, the Post, or anybody else, is not talking about this stuff, what this is meaning. We're involved in all these he said this, she said that, and gotcha stuff instead of talking about these real issues. But, you know, the one thing that I would say probably in President Obama's favor, he's probably one of the luckiest presidents in American history, in the fact that he doubled the national debt and interest rates dropped every single year during his entire 8 years as president, meaning that interest expense, even though the government was running these massive deficits, is interest rates dropped by 43% from the day he assumed his first day in office to the last day he left office, January 20th of this year. Interest rates were down 43%, which was why he was able to add almost $10 trillion of debt, and it didn't impact the budget. So if we get back to this 3.29% rate at $20 trillion, we could be looking at over $600 billion in annual interest expense. And that's why we keep talking about this disparity between hard and soft data. In other words, between optimism and what we're actually seeing take place in the hard economic numbers. And as we just did in the last segment, why everybody, economists are kind of puzzled, saying, gosh, the stock market's up at a record level. All this optimism, why aren't we seeing this translated into credit growth? In fact, credit growth is slowing, money supply is growing, and credit is deteriorating, with the number of banks on the troubled list for the FDIC going up considerably over the previous year.
All right, let's move on to another aspect of things that cause contractions in the economy. That is the Fed shrinking its balance sheet and what that means for interest rates, money supply, the stock market, and also for the government deficit, because this is one that doesn't get quite as much attention as the interest rates.
No, and this is something that I'm sure at some point Congress is going to be concerned about it. But another aspect is from 2008, they ended QE at the end of 2014. The Fed's balance sheet went from $800 billion to $4.6 trillion. So if you take a look at that, you know, you go from $800 billion to $4.6 trillion, that was an increase of almost 500% in the Fed's balance sheet. Now, what they do is they just print money out of thin air and they buy debt. Now, let's talk about how the Fed actually works. So the Fed has $4.6 trillion made up of roughly about $2.6 trillion in mortgage-backed securities and about $2 trillion in treasuries. And they're talking about shrinking their balance sheet by $2.5 trillion. I seriously think that this isn't going to happen. But let's talk about what the implications are of a shrinking balance sheet. The Fed earns interest on this debt of $4.6 trillion. Now, they use that money to run the operations of the Fed. And at the end of its fiscal year, anything the Fed has earned in interest that it has not spent to run the Federal Reserve, it remits back to Congress. And over the years, that figure has been considerable. And so, for example, it has been as low as $30 billion in 2007 to $100 billion a year between 2014 and 2016, meaning at the end of the government's fiscal year, which is September, is also the same thing with the Fed. The Fed turns around and says, all right, we took in $105 billion in interest. It cost us $5 billion to run the Federal Reserve. We have $100 billion left over. They send a check to Congress, and Congress uses that in its budgeting They're counting on that. Well, in 2016, the figure dropped from 100 billion down to 90 billion. So as the Fed shrinks its balance sheet, it's going to earn less in interest payments, which means it's going to remit less to Congress, which also means the budget deficit is going to go higher. So the government's budget deficit, just forget about the government spending extra money. If the government budget deficit remains flat, they don't increase it. And Trump is trying to slow the rate of increase in agencies by cutting to pay for other things. The government budget deficit is going to go up for two reasons. Number one, interest rates are rising, which means it's going to cost the government more to borrow. So interest expense is going up. It's up $28 billion in the first half of the government's fiscal year 2017, which accounts for almost half of the increase in the government's budget deficit of $63 billion. Number two, it's also going to go up because the Fed, as it shrinks its balance sheet, is going to be remitting less and less interest to Congress. And so all of these things are going to add up together. And quite honestly, John, this is all set to explode under the Trump presidency. And I think sooner or later, I mean, it is going to take the most adept management of business expenses to get these things through, whether it is deregulation, whether it is lowering taxation, whether it is infrastructure spending, or whether it's spending on defense, as the world has become more of a dangerous place, as we've seen recently. So all of this, I'll tell you, it's going to take a Herculean task to get all these things done, because under President Trump's watch, he inherits $20 trillion in debt. And we're going to see rising budget deficits, rising interest payments, decreasing payments from the Federal Reserve, which means more debt, more interest expense. And that's going to limit the ability of President Trump or any president that would follow him to take any actions. And that's why sooner or later, we're heading for a budget crisis, maybe not at the end of this decade, but sometime in the next decade. And it's one of the reasons that this report that came out last Friday is a major concern. I was surprised that nobody has been talking about this. I didn't see it anywhere other than the things that we look at. But according to this report that came out Friday, the government's debt will grow unsustainably from 77%, this is the public debt that's outstanding. It doesn't include the debt that's owed to the trust funds, to 150%. Rapid spending growth will outpace revenue. Rising debt will slow economic growth. Rising debt has other important costs, including cutting out the ability to respond to emergencies. The cost of waiting to fix the debt is high. And the major trust funds, I'm talking about Social Security, Medicare, and the Disability Trust Fund, will start running into trouble by the year 2023. And so, you know, if you can, listen to the interview we ran on Financial Sense this week with Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff, which ran on Tuesday, where the topic was America's broke. And he's talking about these problems because, as the CBO talked about, the federal trust funds faced exhaustion in the coming years. The Highway Trust Fund runs out of money in 2021. Social Security Trust Fund gets into trouble in 2023. Medicare Part A Hospital Insurance Trust Fund in 2025. And Social Security Trust Fund in 2031. And John, do you hear any of this discussed anywhere on any of the news stations in the financial media at all?
No, that's what I meant. I mean, we have a huge amount of sniping going on, and we are actually in an information war and fighting for the freedom of speech issue on the media. But this stuff, this is nowhere to be found. Now, as soon as it does begin to show, I'm going to predict this here on the show, it will be swept up into this snipe fight that's going on and used as clubbing material against the Trump administration. So mark that down. All right. That this is how it's working. Since having been a member of the media for 5 decades, I know how they think. You know, I know which way it's going to go.
Well, it's just something I want to put our listeners on alert, because I can't believe, you know, we began the beginning of the year talking about this, because you remember the euphoria that came into this stock market after November 8th. Instead of plunging, the market took off, and we are now at record levels, the second most expensive market in U.S. stock market history over the last 100 years. And everybody's talking about all this optimism. We're going to do this. We're going to be able to do that. And I'm saying, wait a minute, hold on. This is the first guy to come in since George H. Bush with an aging business cycle, with the Fed raising interest rates. Our previous presidents entered office elected on the ability to get us out of a recession with the Fed lowering interest rates. And now we're starting to see, as this the article that came out this week in the Wall Street Journal, Obama's debt interest rate bomb, it's now starting to go in the opposite direction. And we also got a little bit of a clue with Janet Yellen's speech on Monday, which nobody picked up on, which was, hey, the era of easy money is over. We're going to be raising it. So you know what? The Fed is going to do what it always does. It's going to keep raising until it breaks something. And just remember that every single recession since World War II has been caused by a Fed rate raising cycle. Most bear markets, with the exception of two, were preceded by a recession. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about all this enthusiasm, because this is a lot of this stuff that's below the surface that nobody's talking about, that we are on alert, at least for our clients, for what's going on out there. So hopefully the media will start to pick up more and more on this, because, you know, every quarter you're going to get these CBO reports that are going to be coming out that are going to talk about what's happening with the budget deficit, interest rates. But it's rather interesting, this report coming out Friday. And unfortunately, we didn't spend much time on it. So I wanted to save it for this week, because it's something that we are paying close attention. We're monitoring the credit markets. We're monitoring the money supply. We're monitoring a number of factors, because you want to know what's going to happen in the future. Watch the bond market and the credit markets. They will give you a warning sign well ahead of the stock market. The stock market will still be heading higher, reaching higher peaks when these troubles below the surface. And that's what you need to keep your eye focused on.
You know, it is really important, Jim, for people to take this all seriously. And the reason why is this develops under the surface. It reminds you of a tidal wave, you know, tsunami. You can't see it a lot of times till it gets close to shore. And what happens is this is all brewing, and then it'll just take a black swan rogue event. Boom! It triggers whatever has been brewing for all that time. And of course, the average person sits there and goes, where'd that come from? You know, when if they looked, it was available to see all the time. So that's something to observe and to plan. If you're planning for retirement, if you're planning for any kind of investment, you need to understand which way the trend is going before the trend arrives there. That's why we do this here on the program. I think it'll be turbulent political times. I really do. I think it'll be turbulent political times. So anything we're looking for in the weeks to come here, Jim, here on the program, as if there weren't stuff?
I think the big story in the weeks ahead, John, is going to be corporate earnings. They're expected to increase, especially on the top line. So we're going to be watching corporate earnings, because the stock market needs a catalyst. It's certainly not coming from the Federal Reserve, and it's certainly not coming from the economic numbers. So if the stock market is to head higher, it's going to take higher corporate earnings and higher corporate sales to drive stock prices higher. So that's the big thing, I think, in the weeks ahead. And we're also going to be paying attention, as this is the first month in Q2. We're watching for those numbers. We're watching credit. The credit numbers are indicating that Q2 numbers are going to be off to a slow start, because usually the typical pattern over the last 8 years has been a weak fourth quarter, weak first quarter. The second quarter and the third quarter are the strongest quarters of the year. So we're going to be watching the economic numbers along with corporate earnings. In the meantime, well, we're out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until we talk again, we hope you have a wonderful Easter weekend.
You can- can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.